All right, welcome back to the program. It's 570 News Midday here on 570 News and Rogers TV, 1205. Very glad that you could be along. It's Tuesday, it's noon, it's the Tuesday Tech Hour, hashtag Tech Hour on Twitter. You can get me on Twitter as well, at Eric Droz. And I will say this before we get into the Tech Hour today. The phone lines are open through the entire hour, through the entire Tuesday Tech Hour. You can phone in, comment, ask questions, what have you. I'll give you the numbers right now. 519-570-2545 is our local number, 1-800-570-5715. Star 570 by cell. You can always fire me an email. That's easy. Eric@570news.com. All right. Today we're going to be talking and exploring user experience, UX as it's called. I have that in brackets here, UX. Why isn't it UE? We'll find out, I guess. Although that's the European Union, isn't it? That's probably why. Mark Connolly and Robert Barlow Bush, UX experts in town, co-founders of the Flexible Conference, which brings together UX experts in KW September 13th and 14th in studio. How are you guys?
Great. Fun to be on the show.
Yeah, yeah, thanks, Eric. Thanks for being here. UX, user experience. What is that all about? What does that mean, user experience? User experience for what?
You know, it's a bit of an umbrella term.
Yeah.
I like to describe it as saying, you know, anyone... Have you ever used a product that you've just loved?
Rarely.
More commonly, you've probably used products that you hate,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Want to throw out that window right there, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So UX folks are basically the people out in the, you know, mostly the technology world who are awake at night figuring out how can we make products that people love using and don't want to throw out the window.
Are we talking about websites or are we talking about anything?
It could be anything.
You know, within the digital world, it could be websites, it could be web applications like interacting with your bank, it could be apps on your smartphone, it could be any sort of digital interface, any digital product. But more broadly, it can touch on other things like, you know, the experience of going into a particular retail environment and shopping there.
Okay. So I mean, as you mentioned, it is a broad term then. Mm-hmm. So for example, when we log on to Facebook and it looks different all of a sudden, they've changed their layout. I'm assuming there's people behind that are sitting somewhere in LA or wherever in California saying, how do we make the user experience for people on our website better? How do we get more people engaged? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. There's certainly the folks who are involved in those kind of changes would identify with user experience.
And who are these people? I mean, are they engineers or software engineers? Who are they?
It's a range of backgrounds that people come from, and depending on the company, there might be someone who's, or multiple someones who are dedicated to designing the user experience, or if it's a small company, it might be the development team that's responsible for it, and you've got people with an interest in that. It really depends on the company. You know, at a place like Facebook, the example you gave, they have a large team.
Sure.
They have people focusing on research, talking to users and understanding how they want to interact with the product. And they'll have graphic designers, they'll have interaction designers, they'll have a range of people working on all aspects of it. And not just for the website, but for the mobile applications as well.
Yeah, and more than not, I think that changes, people don't like change very often, right? Unless it's something that is drastic and much better. I'm assuming there's a balance there in terms of how much do we switch? What do we leave? What do we leave out? What do we put in? That has to be a pretty long process. And how do these people involved in UX know what to change and what not to change? Is it just based on user feedback? I mean, that's got to be a big portion of it.
User feedback is a big part. Core in the UX toolbox is various forms of usability testing where you will, you know, observe people using your product and find out where they have areas that they're struggling with. In fact, there's lots of online tools now on the web where, you know, companies that, you know, run a website or a web application that you use can literally play back like videos of what you've been doing to see areas where you've been struggling.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean playback video?
Well, they can essentially capture the story of what you did maybe on Facebook today. and see, you know, and look at things like, you know, is this particular feature being used by people? Yes or no?
They're not watching you through the video camera on your, computer.
It's they're not watching us yet.
good clarification. The NSA is apparently doing that, apparently. But UX folks aren't. Yeah.
But you know, it's an interesting thing to talk about as well, because, I mean, Facebook, and I bring up Facebook because they're just a big tech giant that everybody likes to pick on, but they have been getting a lot of, negative press, for example, for their latest Messenger app that they brought up. It made me download it. I didn't like it. Why do I have to download this Messenger app when it was perfectly working fine before the Messenger app? I didn't understand it. And now we're hearing about all this so they can track you, so they can, you know, and they're playing it off as because we want to make the user experience better. We want to collect information to then make the user experience better. It's the same thing with where they did that experiment where they only posted negative posts on people's walls and then they posted only positive. I'm sure you guys have heard about that as well. So these are all experience that we're hearing about, experiments, I should say, that companies are using, and they're saying it's for better user experience in the long run. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's not at all inaccurate. I mean, I think it would be accurate to say that those kinds of changes are going to serve user needs, but also going to serve business needs, which may be quite different, but ideally they're aligned. You know, you gave an example earlier on of coming in and seeing that everything has changed one day. It's different from what it was yesterday. You know, Bob talked about the tools in our toolbox. It may be the case that you come in, you see that, but everyone else doesn't, because what they're doing is they're showing it to a select few people to try and gauge reaction and understand how it's working. So that's one of the tools. You see all these changes, and you're just seeing them. And in iterating through that is doing this again and again and trying new design approaches, they'll land on a new design that they then want to roll out to everybody, roll out to all of their users. But it will be a process that evolves over time.
There's some pretty fun stories out there of companies who struggled with change.
Can you share some?
Yeah, so one of the common ones you'll hear is eBay. At one point many years ago, changed their color scheme, and it was as simple as that. Literally, they just changed the color of they were using on the website, and people hated it. There was this incredible backlash online. We hate the color. It's ugly. We don't like it. So they flipped it back, and then over a period of, I forget how long it was, about 2 months, though, they gradually changed the color a little bit every day until by the end of the 2 months, they were back to what they had done. No one said a word.
So it's abrupt change then that people have a problem with.
It is abrupt change, and it's interesting because psychology plays a big part in doing this kind of work. You know, Mark talked about how there's the factors of the business, there's the customer, like the UX world and the profession is really fun because you straddle, you know, the business, you straddle customers, you straddle technology, so you need to have general knowledge about a wide range of disciplines from technology to cognitive psychology and human behavior.
Tell me about the Flexible Conference. What is that all about?
Well, Bob and I have been doing this UX stuff for many years now. And a few years ago, we'd been talking off and on sort of lightly about doing a conference for a while. A few years ago, we decided to pull the trigger and do it. And basically what we wanted to do was throw a conference for user experience professionals and researchers and other people who are interested, where we would bring people from around the world who are experts in the field to do talks and workshops. Let them see what's going on here in Waterloo region, but also let the people here in town see what's going on in the wider world. Basically, we wanted to have something going on here in town that we didn't have to travel to Europe or San Francisco for, to learn and to have fun and to meet people and build community.
Within the UX world?
Yeah.
And does it happen often where you have a lot of these conferences in other places in the world?
Yeah, it's pretty common. You'll find conferences across the states and Europe.
And so how has it been going? I mean, you mentioned a few years ago. Has it changed over the years? How many people are coming out? I mean, is it something that people are looking forward to?
Yeah, this is year number three for us. I wouldn't say that it's changed a lot. You know, we started this with a pretty clear vision. And we've been making lots of tweaks along the way to make sure that it's fun and
changing
valuable.
Changing the user experience.
Exactly. Well, yeah. I mean, when you're posting a conference for people who are into user experience, suddenly you have to think carefully about the experience.
Yeah.
Strange how that goes.
You know, and it's why I think we took a while to actually pull the trigger on to get to it, because we wanted to make sure we did it right. And as Bob says, if you looked at Flexible the first year and last year and this year, it would look like the same conference. And we think that we've adjusted the things that didn't work well and introduce things that we think would complement what we're doing. So it's not changing dramatically, but we're tweaking it, you know, in much the way that the colors were tweaked slightly over time in that PayPal example that Bob gave. We've been very carefully making little changes that we think make the overall experience one that people want to enjoy.
You know, we considered A-B testing it and holding two conferences simultaneously at different venues.
We couldn't find the venues.
It just, logistically didn't matter.
Where is this one held?
It's being held this year at the Communitech Hub and the Tannery Event Center. So kind of right in the heart in downtown Kitchener of where all the stuff's happening.
And I mean, it's anybody can go? Or is it just specifically for people that work in UX?
It's anyone is welcome to attend if you're interested in this at all, whether you're already in a career where this is on your radar or whether you're thinking about what you'd like to do with a career.
Whether you're just interested, want to learn more, anyone is welcome.
Exactly. Now, the audience, it is targeted to sort of practitioners in the field.
Okay. As I understand it, you are offering for people to save $200 for registering at the Flexible Conference. With a code. What is that all about? 570 News is the code. I know that.
Yep.
570 News is the code. If people in the audience here today are interested in Flexible and want to learn more, if they go to flexible.ca, that's FLUXIBLE.ca, they'll find a link there to the registration page. And on that registration page, if they decide they want to attend, enter in that 570 News code and they will get a $200 discount over the regular registration price.
And this is a two-day event.
Yes.
Two-day event, yeah. Two days of presentations from experts, workshops, lots of food. There's music.
Seriously, there's lots of food.
We need to feed people, and there's music. We don't talk a lot about that ahead of time because we want to have some things that are a surprise. But we have a lot of local musicians performing, and we're really happy about that.
Mm. All right, we're going to have to take a quick break. When we return, we'll be joined on the line by Steve Portigal, who is a researcher based in San Francisco. He actually originally is from Canada, attended the University of Guelph and the University of Toronto. We'll have much more when we return on Rogers TV and 570 News. All right, welcome back. It is 12:20 here on 570 News Midday on 570 News and Rogers TV in studio with Mark Connolly, Robert Barlow Bush as well, UX experts, co-founders of the Flexible Conference, brings together UX experts in KW. It's happening September 13th and 14th. Flexible.ca to register. Use the code 570 News. You get $200 off. The registration fee. So that's always good. We're talking about user experience in terms of how do we make things, if I can put it that way, because they're all things, better for us, the general population. I mean, we talk about Facebook and the amount of changes that they have made. Every time they make a change, everybody hates it. They bring up a new app, everybody hates it. It's almost like, you know, it's a thankless job. Isn't it a thankless job? Could I ask you guys, is it thankless? I mean, you don't really hear from people, hey, thanks for changing that on my Facebook wall. Or do you?
Well, I wouldn't say it's thankless. I mean, we do hear from people.
It seems
who,
like it.
We hear the positive feedback
good,
as well.
Good.
I mean, I've been in situations where we hear back from a customer site where a very specific user has a very particular piece of feedback that means not just the UX was well done, but the product was well done. We're making a difference. Mm-hmm. And we're also hearing it from other stakeholders. I mean, you know, being designers, we're working with people like software developers who are writing the code. We're working with product managers, and we're getting great feedback from those folks as well. So I wouldn't say thankless. I mean, certainly if you're doing something that's reaching a lot of people, then anything you do, a certain percentage of those people are going to be unhappy. And if it's a large group to begin with, that percentage will be large.
Right.
But you're making more people happier than not.
Yeah, that's a good point. Let's bring Steve Portigal, who's on the line now. He's a researcher based in San Francisco. Steve's originally from Canada, attended both the University of Guelph and the University of Toronto. Also the founder of Portigal Consulting, a bite-sized firm that helps clients to discover and act on new insights about themselves and their customers. Steve is on the line. Welcome, Steve. How are you?
Very good. Thanks so much for having me today.
Absolutely. So you were a speaker at the Flexible Conference last year. You're not coming up this year, but last year, tell me a little bit about your experience at the conference.
It was really enjoyable conference. You know, this is the area that I'm from. But I haven't lived there for a long time, so to come back and see, how the user experience community has developed, that there's a lot of savvy people there and a lot of hungry people to learn more, and just that sense of community from the gathering. And I think, you know, Robert and Mark put on a really lovely kind of event that just brought together a lot of people and thoughts and insights and local culture, and it was just, I thought it was a really special environment, and I was really very honored to be part of it.
We've been learning today that UX is kind of this umbrella term for people who work in you know, making products useful, basically. With what you do, where do you fit into that equation?
I mean, my job is to try to understand the need or the opportunity kind of separated from the assumptions that we already have about here's what we're going to make and how we're going to solve it. And sometimes that's just when companies say, we think there's customers out here that are doing something, and we don't know what to build for them, what the thing should be. So help us understand their behaviors and their motivations, and then let's go through an exercise to connect those new perspectives to different kinds of products that we could make for them. And then sometimes we're saying, we have a thing that we're making and it's not working, or we're not sure exactly how we want to have it work, so help us understand, you know, the overlap between what we think we could build and how people are making sense of those activities they're going through, whether those are personal activities or work activities or transactional. There's so many kinds of things that we just don't really understand in depth what it's about until we go out there and look and ask.
Can you give us any examples of something that may have been challenging that you've worked on?
Yeah, I worked for a few years ago on a streaming music server, so a device for the home that would, it was kind of, you know, a bridging technology, as they say, you know, as we're leaving the home stereo era behind slowly and entering the PC, you know, even MP3s are kind of a dated concept. But at this point, there wasn't really anything that bridged your old music and your new music and those listening experiences. And this company had a product that did that. But it really, and they knew that it was hard to use. That was kind of their phrase, and they didn't see the uptake from this technology they believed in so strongly. And so, I mean, very quickly, I'll just describe. We gave
sure.
that we found people that should be doing this, that loved music, that had big collections and had no of MP3s and streaming, and had no way of kind of doing this with their stereo systems. And we gave them this device. It was already on the market. They didn't know about it. We gave it to them for, you know, a couple of weeks, and we had them, you know, go through and use it and set it up and configure it and just live with it. And then we came back and had them talk to us about what it did, what it didn't do, and just even the idea of what is this? Because we don't have, you know, I mean, innovations often live in a space where we don't even know what to call them because they, you know, it's the horseless carriage phenomenon. We don't have a reference point for it. And it was, one of the challenges, I think, was we didn't know what the problem was until we did this, and it emerged that people didn't understand the way the technology was presented to them in the way the different pieces of hardware were designed. One looked like a TV remote. Another part looked like an iPod. And so you were sort of constructing your own, to be jargony, your own mental model about what this thing was and how you would use it. And the software didn't work like that mental model. And so and fixing that is not simply, you know, snapping your fingers. It required a lot of thought, but it ended up impacting the packaging and the manuals and the names of the software elements and the design of the physical hardware, and it ended up kind of pushing this group into really rethinking how to deliver the whole, all these different pieces of the experience so that they were cohesive. And the point being, if it wasn't cohesive, people wouldn't understand kind of the story behind what it was and how to make it part of their lives.
It sounds like a lot of thought, like a lot of trial and error, and it must be, you know, gratifying when it finally works out.
It's thrilling, and you know, you're sort of talking before about, you know, the thankless part of the users, and of course we can. It's great to have people have a better experience, and it's you know, because I work with teams that are trying to do that. You know, part of the thanks I get is seeing them understand more richly how to help the people that they're trying to help. It's not the people that make things are bad. They just don't, they haven't necessarily gotten out of their own perspective. So when this team started to understand the power of this mental model, as I call it, to to kind of drive their design and user experience work, that was really gratifying as well, to see them see those light bulbs go off for them.
Yeah. Listen, Steve, thanks so much for joining us and sharing those experiences with us today. We got to run. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll be back with much more. It's the Tuesday Tech Hour on Rogers TV and 570 News. All right, welcome back. 12:34 here on 570 News Midday on 570 News and Rogers TV. It is the Tuesday Tech Hour, hashtag Tech Hour on Twitter. We're in studio with Mark Connolly, Robert Barlow Bush, their US UX, it's a tough thing to say, UX experts. Say that 10 times fast. UX experts, co-founders of the Flexible Conference. It is happening September 13th and 14th. Right here in Kitchener-Waterloo. And now we're also joined in studio by Brent Bizion. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's good. Good
look
job.
At that. That's pretty good, right?
Right on.
With Thalmic Labs. And you have something. First of all, welcome. And Brent, maybe tell me a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are now.
Cool. Well, hi. My name is Brent Bizion. I'm from Montreal. I moved to KW fairly recently. And we're still just kind of going through getting settled and everything here. So it's a nice town. And you guys are awesome. You know? That's what I'm supposed to hear the cheer.
Traffic?
Like, yeah.
How's the traffic compared to Montreal?
Amazing.
Okay,
amazing.
Good.
It's so easy to get to work. So normally it would take me like an hour or something, you know, each way. But this is great. This really cuts down on time. And so, yeah, I've been working in the online in user experience, user interface design, in that world. So I was working in payment, online payments, at a company that's kind of like a PayPal competitor sort of a thing. And, so I've been doing that for about 5 years. And before that, just kind of general, user interface design, some programming. So I've been in the industry of like, the online world of design and interactivity for about 12 years now. And so it's really cool now that I have the opportunity to jump over to, you know, you're about to announce probably Thalmic Labs.
Right.
And to work in something that's really like emerging in terms of human-computer interactivity. So it's been an amazing opportunity for me, not just for my career, but just because it's so exciting to be doing it.
And you're going to be a speaker at the Flexible Conference, September 13th and 14th, and you're going to be talking about something called Mayo.
Yep.
What is Mayo? Now, you're wearing it on your arm.
Yeah, I've got it on my arm. I mean, I'm on the radio, so there's no point in really
wearing
it on my arm.
We're on TV as well. We're on Rogers TV.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Hi, everybody. Yeah.
You can see how much I'm trembling now.
Yeah. So you have something. It basically looks like an armband, you know, for the folks listening on the radio. But tell me a little bit about it. What does it do? What is Mayo?
Well, the Mayo is a... I'm going to have to read this part because there's
sure,
lots
yeah,
of like
absolutely.
Technical
yeah.
stuff that I have to kind of cover just for the tech heads out there. But the Mayo is an armband. You put it on your arm. It's the first gesture control technology of its kind. All right. Instead of relying on cameras or voice control, the Mayo armband measures electrical activity in your muscles, giving you the ability to wirelessly control and interact with computers and other digital consumer products around you using simple, natural movements, right?
Okay.
Did that sound canned enough?
All right. No, that sounds fantastic. Now I want to know when you can actually use it.
Right.
And why would you use it?
That's cool. I mean, so basically that sort of gives you like a really technical idea of what it is. But it's this cool device. You know, I love this new version of it. This is going to be our final version of the Mayo. And, you know, you put it on your arm. It has sensors all around the inside. And it basically picks up your muscles, muscle movements in your arm. And what we've able to do is convert that into commands based on certain gestures. So one of my favorite use cases for this thing specifically is Netflix.
Right.
So, I mean, like, I'm rocking Netflix at home. I'll just, I don't even have, I can't say.
Well, yeah. It's fine. That's fine. Everybody knows Netflix. It's fine. It's okay. Yeah, you are watching Netflix. You have your Mayo on your arm.
Yeah, and so I'm able to just sort of, you know, use these gestures to control the playback. So I'll be able to wave my hand right to... scan,
fast forward,
wave my hand left to rewind, be able to control the volume. I'll be able to stop and start again. And it's really just kind of exciting. It's cool to use. It's really easy to use. I don't always have to, you know, like, you've got like this, you know, otherwise you can have a remote. You're looking at the remote and you're like, you know, fast forward, play or whatever, whatever.
So but effectively this is, your arm is the remote.
Effectively your arm is the remote for a variety of applications around you.
Okay, so many questions come to my head. For example, you know, is it how far do you have to be or can you be from a television? Do you have to learn the gestures? You know, is my swipe different than your swipe in order to, you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
Does everybody has a different arm? I mean, it's you know, in, how does that work?
Yeah, in terms of, those are a lot of questions. in terms of distance, I'll get to that. You know, I don't actually know. All I know is that I'll be, you know, upstairs while my video is playing downstairs. And I'll just kind of play around, do some, you know, gestures, and it's actually picking it up. So
okay.
I'm trying to figure out when and where that's actually happening, but I don't know that the technical, but it's actually, it's a pretty good distance. Now...
With the gestures.
With the gestures, basically. So is my gesture the same as your gesture? And how do we go about teaching right. you how to do that? I mean, it's a good question. And so basically when you do purchase the Mayo, you're going to get some like a card with a URL where you are able to download software. It's our SDK right now. And that includes the Mayo Connect application. And in the Mayo Connect application, there's a startup guide. Now, the startup guide is... we put a lot of work into this thing just to make sure that it's clean, it's good, and it's understandable. And we're still tweaking it, too, because we're going through testing at the time, or right now. And what this basically does is it trains you on how to use the Mayo, what the gestures are, what they mean, and how to use them in a variety of applications. So the testing has proved to be very positive so far, with some tweaking here and there on the software side of things. But the Mayo itself is performing very well.
Just so I understand this, you would have to have what, a smart TV to be able to install the app or to be able to download your startup guide to then teach you. Not every TV, or I'm assuming, can use the Mayo.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a certain type of TV.
Right. And so right now, the Mayo Connect application is for Mac and PC.
Okay.
And we recently launched the SDK for Android, and we have plans to continue to spread into a variety of other applications for it, so that it will kind of, you know, spread in terms of where it is that you can use that. But right now, it's just those three. And we are also working with some other smart glass companies. We just launched a new website called it's thalmic.com/smartglass, where you'll be able to see use cases for smart glass technologies like Google Glass, Recon, Augmetics, Bridget, and APX.
Are there other devices like this on the market? This is something that's you know, kind of the first of its technologies.
Yeah, this is really the first of its kind, where it's reading. You have a device that's reading your muscles, and you are able to use contextually, you know, applicable gestures to be able to control your devices using your muscles. So, I mean, like, you are the remote. You are the thing that's controlling. You don't have to walk out of a camera or walk into a camera. It doesn't rely on audio. So if you're in a loud space, that it doesn't, you know, register. You know, we all know how, you know, OK Google works. You know, it's sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't really work. Kind of thing. So the Mayo kind of picks up on your muscles. So
now, is that the only use of it? You know, on a television, is there anything else that it could be used for? Or,
well, yeah, I mean, like, I was starting to touch up on the whole Google Glass thing. So you really have to check out this website. I'm going to say it one more time: thalmic.com/smartglass, because it's fantastic. You're going to watch the videos that we put together for it, and they're amazing. So, like, one other use case that I can use is Augmetics, and it's a medical it's a startup company that's creating medical software for the Google Glass. Okay, and so what this allows, it's for medical practitioners basically when they are wearing the Google Glass, they will be able to, you know, go to a patient, and they have all their records, you know, being fed on their Google Glass, but they're able to interact with the Google Glass with the Mayo. Now, where that's specifically beneficial is because it raises standards in cleanliness. So, I mean, it's a lot cleaner for their hands. They don't, you know, you're not touching really something that's really gross on a patient and then touching your Google Glass and whatever, you know. I mean, it's more sanitary.
It brings up a lot of these questions, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it just because we're kind of short on time and I still have so many questions, and I don't know if you guys want to ask anything as well, but this is going to be presented at the Flexible Conference, September 13th and 14th. Both days?
Brent is presenting, I think, on the Sunday, and if things all go according to plan and we work it all out, I'm hoping that we'll have something there that people can try, but that's still to be worked out.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean, is it available right now for people to purchase? Can people try it? How do I try it?
People can pre-order the Mayo right now. We are shipping them out. We're shipping out the MD case, and it's available for pre-order for consumers as well. That's going to be shipped out after the MDKs are all launched out. In order to find one to try, I mean, I'm not really sure how that's going to happen. We do ask people to come in when we need some test subjects for various reasons and applications. But at this point, you know, you're kind of looking at it and you want to try it out. This may be as close as you can get right now.
That's it, eh?
Yeah.
All right. Okay, we have to wrap up. So thanks so much for coming in. Really appreciate it.
Cool.
And good luck with the Mayo.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll come by September 13th, 14th at the Flexible Conference. All right. Thanks again. We'll be back with much more on Rogers TV and 570 News. All right. Welcome back. It is 12:50 here on 570 News. Midday on 570 News and Rogers TV. Thanks so much for being along. It is the Tuesday Tech Hour. We're talking about new exciting, I don't know if it's new necessarily, but it's definitely exciting, this UX field, this umbrella term for people who are trying to make products more useful, more usable, better for the rest of us. In studio with Mark Connolly, Robert Barlow Bush, co-founders of the Flexible Conference. That goes September 13th and 14th right here in KW. By the way, flexible.ca is the website. If you head on there, register for the conference, use the code 570NEWS. You get $200 off registration. It's as simple as that. And we're also joined in studio right now by Karen Schmidlin, who teaches at the University of Waterloo in Stratford. Welcome. How are you?
Well, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So this is, this is a hot career opportunity for young people, not necessarily just young people, but anybody that may be looking at a career change, whatever.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about what you teach and why this is such a exciting career opportunity for people.
It definitely is a hot career right now. And it's a bit of a buzzword, too. So a lot of people don't exactly know what it is. I'm really excited that we have a whole hour to talk about UX. But what I do, I teach at the Stratford campus, which is kind of the digital media campus of the University of Waterloo. I'm very happy to be down there. It's a very fantastic program down there. So I teach on the undergrad and master's level. And what really excites me, I mean, we in the room here always thought UX is fantastic. Nobody has to tell us this is one of the most exciting careers.
Right.
But in my experience, the businesses now realize we do need UX. In my classroom, I do a mix of theory, best practices, but then the students are going to let loose and they have to work on an industry project. So in last year's class, on the master's level, I had The Source sponsor a project. They came with a challenge, a UX problem, and the students had to come up with solutions. So that ended up with students getting scholarships paid by The Source and job offers.
Wow.
So this makes me very happy as a faculty because I want to make sure that what I teach in the classroom is really useful out there.
So this is now a degree program? This is something that you can go in and take? Or are you still, taking engineering or programming as part of the UX program?
No, there's no engineering.
Okay.
And actually, it's something Robert just said. It's really a great career for people who are not the hard programmers. They're
right.
not sitting down in a corner programming. They want to do, maybe they understand a little bit of technology. They know how to make a website and maybe an app, but they want to do something else. Maybe they have a background in psychology, communications, marketing, design, and that really bridges these two things, so all these things together.
Someone mentioned anthropology, too, and I found that very interesting. How does anthropology fit into all this?
Yeah, well, our first caller today was Steve Portigal talking about doing research in this field, and it's remarkable how much business has stolen, let's say, borrowed and adapted.
Embraced.
Actually, it's true. Has embraced. That's good.
Embraced
and adapted.
Actually, it's true. We've stolen. Yeah.
Yeah. Ethnography and anthropology. There's actually a lot of philosophy and frankly, technique there that is now being applied in the business world to sort of get inside the heads and the lives and the contexts of the people who use a product that you're trying to design.
That's so interesting to me. You know, the fact that all of these other subjects, all of these other disciplines, if you will, fit into the UX experience. I mean, and you're right. I don't think people realize that. I think that when people listening to this, perhaps watching on Rogers TV, might be saying, well, you know, it's the tech hour, and that means I have to know things about technology, and I don't, so here we go. But it's not the case anymore,
right? I think tech is about people. If you know
exactly,
anything about people, and we all do a little bit, then you're in the right place, right? And I think that's what's exciting for me about UX and anthropology, because it brings back, let's look at people. What do they need? What makes them happy? How can we make software or an app that people want to use and can use? So
it's about the ideas then that people are maybe saying, well, you know, I would like this improved, or maybe I would like this improved. It's about being one of those people that can solve that through idea rather than application. Is that a good way of putting it? Do you guys think, or I mean, it's a mixture, right? But
it's a mixture. I mean, I think the way to put it would be, you know, the UX people involved in a project are thinking more about the people,
right,
whereas maybe the technical people are thinking more about the behind-the-scenes systems that will make happen whatever the product needs to support. And I'd say, too, that, you know, I don't think we want to leave a picture that it's only the arts side of tech and arts coin that does UX, because, you know, the systems design engineering folks at UW, computer science folks at UW, they also have courses that touch on aspects of this. But, you know, as Karen has said, what makes it really interesting is that you don't have to have a technology focus or a technology background in order to be doing this. There's a broad range of disciplines that feed into it.
I'd say we're tapping into a larger trend here where, you know, we've kind of figured out a lot of the basics of how to work with technology now. The really, really hard problems, a lot of them, are about how do we fit technology into our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so hence you see the rise of disciplines such as UX.
And I think it becomes powerful when you put the art student, in my case, students, the art students and the engineers in one room and let them work out stuff. So I also give sessions at the Conrad Center. That's a business and entrepreneurship center for engineering students. So very different audience. But when I get my students all together, it becomes really powerful because you have the more artistic view and then you have the hardcore engineering view. And this together, I think, creates the best possible world.
Is it growing quickly?
Oh,
I mean, are people coming out of high school, kids coming out of high school, saying this is what I want to get into?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and what do you think attracts them to it? I mean, to me, the reason why it's so interesting to me is because, as someone mentioned, I don't have to be a huge techie to be able to now kind of work in the tech world, right?
Well, maybe it goes back to something you said at the beginning of the hour. We all have experience with terrible software, kiosks, and everybody has these stories, right? And we happily share them. And now we realize, you know, there's actually a big gap here. We can make these things better. And back to what you just said, Robert, you know, get it back into, make our life better. Not the other way around. Not fitting our needs into some little box.
It really is a people industry.
It is. And it's a great career in itself, because I'll tell you, the demand for UX talent far outstrips the supply. Even here in the region, there's a lot of companies who get this and are actively invest in UX. You know, we can identify, say, companies like Boltmade, Communitech, Desire to Learn, Demure, Kick, Keros Health.
The list goes on.
The list goes on, right? Mm-hmm. Like there are many, many more.
All right, we got to run. So thank you, everybody, for coming in. It was a great hour. I learned a lot. So thanks again.
Thank you.
If you're watching us on Rogers TV, thank you so much. Stick around. Daytime is next. Once again, very quickly, that Flexible Conference, September 13th to the 14th, flexible.ca. And use the code 570NEWS when you register. You'll get $200 off that registration. We'll be back with much more on 570 News.